Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Really, Duncan had it. They turned it over. Alley-oop back to Kevin.
Oh, baby! Woo! KD!
You can see it coming, and the building is electric off that slam dunk.
Hello and welcome to the Wolf Among Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Hedke. As always, you can find me on Twitter at @B_HedkeNBA. And the show is on Twitter at @AWAW_podcast. As always, we're part of the Wolf Among Wolves podcast network on wolfamongwolves.com. Today, I'm joined by editor-in-chief of Canis Hoopus, Kyle Tigies. He's been on the show a few times, but he's back. And we are going to just kind of talk about Timberwolves in general. And then we have a couple takes that I asked for on Twitter that we'll talk about as well. But how's it going, Kyle? How are you doing today?
It's going well, man. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming back on. It's always a good time talking to you. Our optimistic podcast episode from before the season doesn't look so good right now, just for a myriad of reasons. But the Timberwolves, they've been disappointing. But my thing is, how are you feeling after the Atlanta game? Because it wasn't, in my opinion, as bad as, like, you know, the Lakers and Clippers and Blazers games. But it obviously wasn't as good as, like, the three wins we've had in the season. So on your scale, like, how are you feeling after that game on Monday?
Well, the good news is I had Monday off because I technically work for the government. So watching the Timberwolves for, like, on my lunch break or, like, around lunch was actually pretty fun. I didn't think the game was that bad, even though there was, I think, what was it, like 41 combined turnovers?
I think between it was the two more teams? Than that. I don't remember for sure, but I think it was, Atlanta had 26 by themselves. I don't remember exactly what the Timberwolves had.
Okay, it was probably worse. But yeah, I mean, it was ugly. Like we said, you and I hooked up in the beginning of the season. We were both pretty optimistic. But I also didn't think, what were you going to say, how many turnovers?
42. So you're 42.
42, okay. Yeah, that was bad. But no, I mean, we were optimistic back in early December. But we also didn't predict, you know, Carl getting COVID or Carl almost breaking his wrist.
Right.
He's played, I think, what, four games now?
Four.
Yep. So the team, I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about this more, but, like, I'll be real, the team is terrible. The team is not good right now. But, and there's a whole nother spinoff into how can you build your roster that's so self-dependent on one guy, right? Like the old LeBron Cavs years, where it's like if he's out, that team is a 10-win team.
Right.
That's not good, but it's also, I mean, there's a lot we can say about Rosas and his front office, and we'll talk about it coming up here, but I just think it just sucks because you hate to lose, and the Atlanta game was a very winnable game.
Exactly.
But I don't know, I just... At some point, this team needs to win, or people are going to get fired. It's that simple. At some point, Ryan needs to string together good progress, or he's gone. Same with Rosas. Like, he's not going to be here forever. But at least now, I feel like you have some built-in excuses. Like, you look around the league, teams that lose guys. I mean, yes, for every Memphis, there's a lot of teams that lose their star guy, and they're just kind of flat.
Yeah.
So if Carl's played four games this year, like you said, that means he's played five games with D'Angelo Russell. It's been a year, and it feels like it's been 6 years, and we're already ready to blow it up again. But it's like, I think if you can just close your eyes and get through Carl's, you know, positive COVID test, which again, he has every right to take his time coming back,
because
that's a real thing that affects your health. But if he can come back, knock on wood, I'm still optimistic to see what this team can do. I'm still optimistic to see the pieces starting probably in February.
My optimism honestly hasn't wavered for a healthy Timberwolves team. It's probably actually grown just by what we've seen from like certain things we've seen that we maybe didn't expect, like Carl just being like really good on the defensive side of the ball, and Malik like ensuring us that he is who he was last year at the last 15 games of the season. But there has been things that have taken it down a notch. Obviously, Ricky Rubio, he hasn't looked good. Like, that brings my optimism down a little bit. And then, like, But things like Jared Vanderbilt working his way into the rotation makes me feel good. Wancho kind of brings it back a little bit. So it's about at the same level that it was before the year. But the Wolves have to get healthy and stay healthy for me to continue this optimism. Because, like you said, the Timberwolves are going to be bad without Cat because the team is so dependent on him. But realistically, like, think about some of the other teams with, like, big-name players. Like, how good are the Nuggets if Jokic goes down? They're probably in a relatively similar situation to the Timberwolves. They would be better, but they're better with Jokic than we are with Towns, too. So, like, step by step, like, they probably move down just as many steps losing Jokic as the Wolves do losing Cat. So, sure, you can make that argument that we depend too much on Cat, but I think we depend on Cat the same amount that the Nuggets depend on Jokic. They just are a better team, and they made it to the Western Conference Finals last year. So, like, I think you can win with Cat there. Just, you're going to have to find a way to stay afloat without him, and that's where the Timberwolves have really lacked, is not even, you got one win without Cat, and it was a game where the other team was also missing their best player, and you were riding the high of just Cat just being a dog the night before, and just, I don't know, just, like, lighting it up in the interview after the game. Like, that propelled them to that win. So what's going to propel them to get a win or two before Cat comes back?
I don't know. I mean, to go back to your original point, like, if you're pessimistic on the Wolves, or you don't like Ryan, or you don't trust Gersh, like, you're valid. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard. You know what I mean? Like, I think sometimes guys like you and I get shaded a weird color because we're optimistic, because we decide. I mean, again, we all tune into this every day, or every other day, right? They have games every other day between now and, like, Valentine's Day. It's crazy. My optimism lies in the fact that, again, I'll say it, like, they're the worst basketball team in the league right now. There is no debating it. And if you hate them right now and you hate watching them, you are correct. My optimism comes in as if you, if this was an expansion team that didn't have the Timberwolves' lore of being really bad for as long as we can remember, and all you did was focus on this one year and this product, I think you'd be optimistic. Because I mean, the Detroit game to start the season was really ugly, but they kind of just did enough to win. And then they blew us all away by going into Utah and winning again. And when Carl's on the court, they win. So, yes, there's a whole topic about, well, is it a really good roster construction if you're missing one guy and your team sucks? I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah, like, there's no flaws about, in it.
And the Denver thing is kind of a beautiful analogy. Like, we haven't seen Denver play without Jokic for a while, but I've watched plenty of Denver games, just being on the West Coast and stuff, and I've kind of been intrigued by them because I thought they outperformed their roster in the bubble.
I agree.
And they're 6-7. I mean, they have three more wins than the Timberwolves, and I think you would think that they have 40. You know what I mean? Just it's still so early in the season. But yeah, I mean, if they were without Jokic, man, they might just get pummeled for a couple weeks. So again, these next 2 weeks, if Carl does come back on a 2 week kind of plan, these next 2 weeks are gonna be horrible. And I don't know who's gonna survive it. But I just think, you know, like, coming up, they have the Magic. We're recording this on a Tuesday. The Magic are at home on Wednesday in Minnesota on Wednesday. They've lost six straight. They're not very good either.
Mm-hmm. No, and they're really injured too. I mean, everybody is out for them. Like, everybody. Yep. So that's a game that the Timberwolves need to play and, like, be in that game. And even the game yesterday against the Hawks, like, the Timberwolves were in that game. It's just they didn't do enough to close out that game. And there was a lot of opportunities there, and they just didn't take advantage. Like, 26 turnovers from the Hawks. Like, the Timberwolves need to take advantage of that, and they didn't. But Orlando's going to be just as winnable game, I would say, when you talk about everybody that's out already has been, like, Mo Bamba's been out, Elfur Gominu, Chuma Okeke, Jonathan Isaac, Markel Fultz, they've all been out, and then now Michael Carter-Williams, Evan Fournier are out. So you're left with, like, Cole Anthony, Nikola Vucevic, and Aaron Gordon. Like, that's who you're going up against. How do the Timberwolves combat that? How do they stop Vucevic?
And just like you said, all those guys you listed and the teams, talking about the Hawks game, they get the Hawks again on Friday. You know what I mean? So they do have some winnable games coming up. They're at home. There's a pretty cool stat. I mean, you're far more analytically inclined than I am, but our friend Real Super Dave, he's Super Stats Dave on Twitter.
It was the turnover one, the 14 yeah, mark?
Yep, turnover. He said turnovers are a key factor in the Wolves win or lose. 13 turnovers or less, they're 3-1, and if they have more than 14 turnovers, they're 0-8. They're the youngest roster in the league, so you would expect turnovers. But like you said, they forced, what, 26 turnovers for Atlanta? That's awesome. Like, if you rewatch the game, which is always my biggest thing, like, to understand this team is to go back and rewatch it when you're not trying to live tweet it or whatever. They actually were, like, in a lot of passing lanes. Like, they did some things really well. But if you I'm building them up to then tear them down. If you get 26 turnovers and you lose the game, that's a really bad loss. That's a really bad loss. So then that starts to go into rotations, and, you know, you can't – the Timberwolves – again, I watch a lot of other basketball, but I think the Timberwolves have to give up the most 10-0, 12-0 runs. It just seems like it. I don't know how to find that online, but I just – that's like a criticism of Ryan I have, is that I've watched games where a team gets a 4-0 run and the coach is halfway on midcourt calling a timeout.
That was Lloyd Pierce on Monday, yesterday. And I tweeted out, I said, the Timberwolves had a 4-0 run and Lloyd Pierce called a timeout. Ryan Saunders would never call that timeout.
Start the second half, right?
Yeah.
They got two easy buckets. If you go back and look at the game log at 11:31 in the game, was 11:31 left in the third, Lloyd Pierce, the Hawks coach, called a timeout.
Yep.
That's the type of stuff where it's like, I think Ryan, who is also the youngest head coach in the league.
Yeah, I think either him or Jenkins or is.
So one of the youngest, if not has the youngest roster. Like, he needs to, especially now that I feel like the general consensus is the heat is turning up on him a little bit. He needs to be far more micromanaging than, like, he can't go Phil Jackson on some of this stuff. He can't let his young guys try to just dig out of a 12-0 run, because that's when you lose the game. If you go back and watch that Memphis game, that's why that Memphis loss was brutal, is because, for better or worse, they handed it to Memphis for three quarters. Yes, Memphis was without Ja Morant. Like, I get all that. But they were handing it to him, but then they had this one just... this momentum, you could feel it watching it at home. It's like, oh, this is going to keep getting worse and worse. And Ryan just didn't stop the bleeding. And that's where you have to criticize him. It's like, you have to understand and read the room and not be afraid to strategically use those timeouts. Like, you lose them. You lose certain timeouts if you don't call them prior to the three-minute mark. Like, you got to kind of understand some of that stuff.
Lloyd Pierce literally called a timeout at 3:01. In Monday's game, because he was going to lose it and the Wolves were making another small run. He just called a timeout because he was going to lose it anyway, and just to kind of stop the bleeding. And I don't want to go too deep into Saunders, because you, Jack, and Jake on Paint Points the other day, this was before the Atlanta game, I think, you went really deep into, like, Saunders and all of that. And I don't have a lot to add, just because I don't think there was, like, a huge glaring thing. Anything huge and glaring that came out from yesterday's game with him. I just want to say, like, that conversation was really good. So if you listening haven't listened to Paint Points podcast by Jake Painting, him, Kyle, and Jack Borman were on there. They talked about that. But Saunders needs to figure that type of stuff out, like when to stop the bleeding, what rotations work. The rotation thing, I give him a little bit of leeway just because of the injuries, but also, like, he's had enough time without Cat to realize what works with the guys that replace him and what doesn't work. So that's going to be something I'm going to see if he can figure that out at all before Towns comes back. Because Cat tested positive on January 15th, and it's at least 10 days. So the 10th day would be the 24th. So the Timberwolves' first game after that is the 25th in Golden State. So I don't know if Cat's healthy by then. We don't know if he's had symptoms. We don't know anything to that extent. But that is theoretically the first game he could play if he tests negative and he's feeling good. But I don't know what travel would look like. Can he travel there by himself with league protocols, or does he have to go with the team? Like, I don't know what any of that looks like. But that's the soonest he could possibly be back, which is he'd miss three more games. What does Ryan do in those three or more games to get this team, like, keep them afloat? Because if they lose four games until Cats come back, they're 3-13.
Right. Yeah, so they have, like you said, they have the Magic coming up on Wednesday, the Hawks on Friday, the Pelicans on Sunday, all or Saturday, all at home. All teams that if you just click the standings button are also struggling. Like, it's all teams that, you know, the Pelicans have had their ups and downs. But I think, yeah, the Pelicans are five. So all teams that are under 500, even the Hawks, who just beat the Wolves and looked sloppy, I mean, they're underwhelming. And then I think we talked about this. I talked about this with Jack and Jake, and we've talked about this before, you and I, but like, sometimes when you're really mad at the Wolves and you have every right to be, you should just like take a step back and just like peruse Twitter or online or whatever. Just like, there are so many teams that are disasters and kind of dumpster fires right now. And every win builds up a fan base. But yeah, the Wolves have lost, what, how many in a row now? So yeah, for your question, these next three, they have to get one, because this season to me was always kind of going to be low expectations. I think others would push back on that, but it's the reality. But those two games next week are both in like a, it's like a, or away and away at Golden State, who the Wolves have
Monday and Wednesday.
The Wolves have many connections with the Golden State Warriors right now.
There is a ton of revenge.
It's probably their biggest. It's probably their biggest rival, just based off of the interconnectivity of the two franchises. And not having Carl for both those games, which are two of the only four nationally televised games for the Timberwolves, that would suck. So ideally, you get Towns back for at least one of those matchups. You can throw him at Wiseman. James Wiseman's been looking very promising at points, but he's also looked really bad against veteran bigs.
I saw a Warriors fan literally say, send Wiseman to the G League on Twitter yesterday, so... Or maybe it was even today. Like, and that's the thing, like, too, I don't want to get into Ant right now, but, like, Ant's been struggling. Wiseman's been struggling, you know? Like, they're just rookies, so I don't think there's too much to talk about. But like you said, like, if Cat's not playing in those two games, like, that sucks, because, like, those are games that could really build up the Timberwolves, just being on national TV, people actually watching the Timberwolves play and, like, understanding what's going on, especially if Cat's there. Because I don't think people have across, like, because I watch, like, or I listen to podcasts nationally and stuff, and people haven't realized, like, the impact Towns brings on the defensive side of the ball, too. Because they're not watching, they see his box score, and it looks like, okay, that's Karl Anthony Towns. He's got 12.5 rebounds, 20-something points, 4 assists. Like, it's Cat. But they don't realize the impact he's brought on defense just because they haven't watched him, and I don't blame them. People in Minnesota can't even watch the Timberwolves right now because FSN just sucks. So, like, how can people all across the country really watch? I mean, you can, obviously it's workable, you can do it, but like legally, like there's not a lot of options there, which is disappointing, but I don't know. I hope he's back as soon as possible. You're muted.
Oh, really? Okay, let's get back to this, because I had a really good take there.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I didn't want to interrupt your style there.
No, go for it.
Your point one of our agenda is these next three home games are really important. Ryan needs to – I think Ryan's job is still safe, and that's a whole nother podcast for 6 hours.
I agree. But I that point you made with Jake and Jack. That point made total sense to me.
My point was, you can't bring David Vanderpool or whoever else in right now to coach this when the team is literally broken, because all you're doing is setting that person up to fail too. So, but Ryan needs to coach like his job is depending on it. He needs to tighten Ryan. One of Ryan's calling cards, and I always call it the Luol Deng strategy, is that he knows how to like kind of throw a guy into the rotation that's intriguing. Like he got the most out of Luol Deng. His first year under, when he came in for Tibbs, just because they needed a spark, and Luol Deng gave him a spark. The problem was that Luol Deng was washed. So he was done, right? So he didn't even like sign a contract again, and then he retired.
The Lakers tried to get a career-ending injury thing for him after he played for the Timberwolves. Like, that is how washed Luol Deng was. But to the point, like, Saunders got something out of him. He looked good in the few games he played.
Right, and if you were watching that Hawks game, I think you and I were both, like, jaws dropped when all of a sudden Jaden McDaniels subs into the rotation. So, like,
no, that's I, like, took Ryan's a double on, take. I, like, that's where I Ryan typed is it out good. In my I typed it out on Twitter. I was like, I think Jaden McDaniels is coming into the game. And I was like, I think my eyes are deceiving me. And then I saw Ed Davis was in there, and I was like, oh, maybe they changed their mind. But then but then McDaniels was out there too, and I was like, wait, what? I was for it. I was so for it because, and this is kind of a spoiler for you, but people listening, the article will probably be up, but I just finished up this afternoon a piece on Jaden McDaniels. And I talked about, does he deserve a chance to be in this rotation while Kat's out? Like, is that his spot, or is Lehman going to take that spot over? And when asked about that today, I just watched the after practice interview with Saunders. I don't remember if it was Dane or who asked, but they said something about Jake Lehman getting back that spot. And Ryan said everybody will get their chance at some point. So he didn't make it sound like Jake was going to have that spot back for sure next game.
Okay.
So my point in the article is like, is that Jaden's spot until Wancho comes back? And if it is, like, what can we expect from him? And then I also talked about, does Jaden even, and this is going probably a little too far, but does Jaden deserve a shot with a healthy roster? Like, what does Jaden do that's so much worse than what Wancho does, where it's not worth playing Jaden over Wancho? Jaden can shoot the ball. Wancho's been shooting poorly. Jaden can shoot. His form looks really nice. He shot the ball so well this year, like 5 for 11 from deep. Defensively, he can't be any worse. He knows where to be, at least. He's a little bit smaller, but he's more athletic, and he has way better like defensive like instincts. So the major point was, why not? And to bring it out, it's not going to happen. Like, when Wancho's back, Jaden McDaniels is not going to be in the rotation. But like next year, I was alluding even to next year, like if Jaden goes and adds 15 pounds of muscle like Culver did, why isn't that spot for him if he has the offense and more of the defense? But to that point, you were talking about Saunders throwing Jaden McDaniels into the rotation just like to see if he had anything. That's not a move anybody expected.
No, and I think anyone who's listening to this that heard you say the phrase next year rolled their eyes. So want to defend all of us. Like, that's not what we're here. We're trying to talk about Orlando and the Hawks. But I mean, it's also a business. And Wancho was signed, and he gets paid a lot more money. And you kind of have to. I don't think Wancho's as bad as he's been.
I said that in the article, too. Like, Wancho's going to play better, more than likely, than he has looked so far. He's going to average more than 6 points a game.
And you can't just instantly bury him, because I don't think he can get traded until, like, March 3rd. And I would be shocked if he wasn't traded like this year. I mean, I think these losses, no matter what you think of Rosas, and if you think he's too proud to admit that he was wrong on a certain thing, like, I think that guy knows what this opportunity is for him, and that if he messes it up, it's going to look bad for future just candidates in his position. So I don't think he's going to let Wancho Hernan Gomez bring down the Timberwolves franchise in his job as president.
Give me a player from last year's team that wasn't a rookie that played bad and is still on the roster today. Trevion Graham's out. Jeff Teague is out. Alan Crabb is gone. He got whatever. Andrew Wiggins is gone. You know, like everybody, the people that were bad that are still on the team is like Jarrett Culver. He's a rookie. And then I don't, like, Jake Lehman was hurt, but he looked good when he was healthy. Like, pretty much everybody that played bad last year isn't on the team anymore, unless you're talking about Jarrett Culver.
Right, and that was Jack Borman's take, but
he's ruthless.
The pushback at that is, though, is a lot of guys you're listing were all, like, expiring contracts. You know what I mean? Like Jordan Bell, all these guys that were easier to move. Again, Gerse's hands are tied. But it'll be interesting to see when the trade market does. Because, I mean, a lot of guys on NBA rosters aren't eligible to be traded right now. And it's kind of a dumb thing in general, but I get it.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Just because the offseason was so screwed up, and now you have this longer period of time. But, like, I'm with you. I would be surprised if Wancho's still on the team at the end of the year. And the reason I say that is, like, I think he's better for other teams than he is for the Timberwolves, specifically like a team that might need a bench power forward that can play alongside a defensive center. Like, if you need somebody just to shoot the ball off the bench, that's a lot more Wancho style than putting him next to Naz Reid and Karl-Anthony Towns. And Cats look better on defense this year, but, like, Wancho would look so much better next to, like, Andre Drummond. Not that we're going to trade him to the Cavs, but, like, he'd look better to a Drummond because Drummond's
he'd look really good next to Jokic again. Him and yeah, Jokic are, like, best friends. We're kind of getting a month ahead right now, but I do think there will be a market for him still. But I think, again, trying to wrap up this main point is that I think the beauty – well, I have a lot of flaws on Ryan or criticisms, but one of the beauties is this is the perfect time to just throw Jaden McDaniels into the deep end because you don't have to worry about offending Wancho Hernan Gomez because he can't play. So, like, you don't have a lot of options. Your roster is slimmed down. I think, you know, the injury report came out this afternoon, and while I think Josh will be back again tomorrow, you know, Carl, Rubio, and Wancho are all out, health and safety protocols. So, yeah, what better way to just throw him in? And I thought his defense, like, he talked about this post-game, but he was told by the coaches, like, you go in there and your primary focus is just defending, which is what all rookies should be told. And I thought his defense looked pretty good, and I'm obviously excited to read your article. But yeah, I mean, give him a chance, and then if he looks overwhelmed, that's the beauty of coaching, just pull him, just yank him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if he doesn't make his first four-minute stint work, pull him, because the benefit of some of this experimenting, which leads to losses and makes fans mad, and I hate losing too. I'm a very competitive human. Like, you get to find some of these gems. And Jared Vanderbilt, man, Jared Vanderbilt, as sad as this is the storyline of the season so far. It is no one else. Because I knew Malik Beasley was good. I just had to read other people's shit on him. I didn't know Jared Vanderbilt could do this, and I think he's a winning player. And at what he's getting paid, I think Jared Vanderbilt is, like, sadly, 12, 13 games in, I think he's the story of the season so far, because I think that dude next to Cat is how you – I think he erases a lot of Cat's things that he's still not great at. I think he's – you know, Taj Gibson cleaned up a lot of Carl's messes, and Jared Vanderbilt's just more athletic, not nearly as polished, but – yeah, I don't know. I've loved watching
way,
him.
He's a way more active, athletic, energized version of Taj Gibson, but that comes with, you know, mistakes, just like rushing stuff too much or going for a rebound he has no chance of getting, which takes him out of the play on defense sometimes. But, like, that's the mold. Granted, it would be great if he could shoot the ball. Like, give him a 35% three-point shot, and, like, that is the exact player you want to play next to Karl-Anthony Towns. But I think that's kind of where the Wolves are hoping Jaden McDaniels can be that guy, where you can be that defensive player that's maybe not to Vanderbilt's level, but, like, somewhere close, but just be able to space the floor also. But then you also have Vanderbilt. Like, you're not picking between the two of them. You would have both of them and just use them interchangeably whenever you need a little more defense or a little more floor spacing. You can kind of figure it out. But that's on McDaniels. He's still, you know, a year or two out, which sucks because the Wolves need to keep Cat happy, to keep the team and the spirits up in general. But yeah, it's Vanderbilt's been the story of the season, that and Carl, just how much the Wolves actually, like, need Karl-Anthony Towns. That's kind of been the other big story to my mind, is, like, how big of, because last year, Towns is impacting the team a lot more this year, I think, than he was last year, which is, like, hard to say because the Wolves sucked without him last year. But I think they'll be that much better with him this year because of how bought in he is.
And this is what makes cover, like, you and I, right? Like, we cover the team and, like, we talk about them daily. What sucks is that we don't have more than 3 games in a row of watching Carl play basketball. So the team is going to lose, and you're going to get your jokes off, and a lot of them are rightfully so. But, like, I was talking about this with Jack and Jake. Like, Carl is fouling. Again, it's a small sample size, but half of his fouls are offensive. Like, defensively, he has – but how do you write the article, you know what I mean, on Carl's defense improving when he's played
– 4 games.
4 games or 3.5 games. So
and that's been an article I wanted to dig into, but I'm like, we've seen him play good defense – in stretches before, and to the outside people, that's what they're gonna see. They don't see, like, I don't know, like, I just know that this time is different. Like, I'm really freaking sure that this time is different. But how do you convince people that aren't watching that closely? And they'll be like, it's four games. Like, anybody can play good defense. D'Lo can play good defense for a couple games. So, like, whatever. But I think it's real this time. But to your point of the fouling thing, not only is half of his fouls are on offense or whatever. I don't know if it's, like, exactly half, but a bunch are on offense. He's also only fouling less than three fouls a game, which is the lowest since... No, it's the lowest in his career. Again, four games. But, like, you can just... The times that Cats played good defense before, it seemed less mental and just more physical. Like, he just happened to make the right reads over and over again. This time, you could just see him calculating and, like, taking his time and being patient with it, which you didn't really see before.
Carla talked about with everything that, not that we want to talk about this now, but when everything that he went through in 2020 and unfortunately is now going through in 2021, he had mentioned things about just kind of like his soul dying, you know, and how he was hardened by all of the loss and all the things he had to go through in his personal life. And I think you start to see that now in game. I think he just looks like a guy who's Carl Anthony Towns is one of the best humans on earth, but he used to just think way too much and strategically plan every word he said pre and post game. He just looks like a guy who's playing basketball now.
Yeah, and before he was definitely like he was definitely really bought into like all of the media training he had gotten. And now he's more so on like the just say what's on his mind and just like be real. Kind of like it's like he took a lesson from Anthony Edwards almost in it with just like being real, which is something that we've been kind of asking. Like people have always thought his answers were super robotic and just saying what he thinks people want him to say. But what people have wanted him to say is what he's doing right now. And that's been something, that's why I think that it's more real. Like, his play is more real because of that. And I think that was your point, too.
And without getting, I know we wanted to talk about a couple other things, but that's why, as it currently stands, on January 19th, I'm still not super freaked out about the upcoming draft and the fact that the Wolves owe a pick to the Warriors, who have been rumored to have performed this heist on the Timberwolves with this improved Wiggins, which I know you're just shaking your head you want to talk about. But I still think that, again, the Wolves had this freak injury. Go back and watch the play. I mean, Towns was fouled. Gobert kind of knocks him down. He lands on his wrist. It as bad as it was, it should have been a broken wrist, right? Like, I watch what happened with Nurkic and watch what happened with CJ McCollum. Like, all these injuries, the Wolves did catch a break by the fact that it wasn't a break. And he came back, and then the COVID thing. So my only optimism, knock on wood, is that when Carl does come back from COVID, if his health is there and Dr. Robbie Sika and all their staff will make sure Carl is 100%, I don't think there's anything else Carl's going to have to go through. Right? So
wrist,
I think...
And the wrist should be healthier now.
Yes, it should be two more weeks. That.
I'm glad you said that in that podcast because I didn't really know how to phrase my thinking because like it sucks. It sucks to beyond measure that Carl Anthony Towns has COVID. One, because just all the shit he's went through with his entire family having it. Like, I'm sure there's so much fear in him because of how much loss has happened to his family and thinking if, like, that's something that could happen to him, too, because he, you know, genetically or anything. And I don't know if COVID works that way. I'm really not in tune that much. But, like, so I'm sure he's, like, scared with all that. But how you phrase it saying basically that it might be a blessing in disguise for him to get his wrist healthier now than, you know, just playing through it. Like, having an extra 10 days or 2 weeks or however long it takes for his wrist to be healthy. Because he came back, obviously, 4 to 6 weeks earlier than projected. So now, just having a couple more weeks, maybe he can do a little bit more with his hand. And maybe he won't be in a cast and he'll be in a brace now. Which will give him a little more movement. Like, Cat was destroying. I mean, he was playing out of his mind with one hand. Like, what's going to happen when he can dribble with his left and not have to just operate from one side of the floor?
Yep.
That's still, like we said, over a week, like a week off, a minimum of 5 days off, probably a little bit longer than that.
And that's why I think when my preseason projections or predictions, I didn't have Cat getting COVID on my prediction board, but I did think the Wolves would start out bad because if their schedule was hard. I wasn't predicting these 30-point blowouts, but I thought that they would be bad. So what? They're 3-9 right now. I guess I had them pegged at 4-8 or something. You know what I mean? But my thought was with this draft pick, because that's now the talk, right? Because the team sucks, and you're already starting to spin the wheels on mock drafts. I've always thought this team was going to kind of figure it out based on chemistry issues and lack of training camp. And I think they're going to start to string together wins if Carl does come back that second half of the season and start to beat all these teams that they're losing to now, because those teams that aren't incentivized to win, like the Wolves are because of their draft pick situation, I still think this team puts together enough wins to kind of get themselves out of that 4-5-6 pick range. So that's why I'm not worried right now. It's not a red flag to me.
Like the Thunder, they might be winning some games now, but like they're not going to be trying to get the eighth pick in the draft. Like towards the end of the year, they're going to be handing teams wins because like they want Cade Cunningham or Evan Mobley or Jalen Suggs or whoever is there. And the same goes for a couple other teams in the league too. Like that's just what's going to happen. Like the Pistons don't want to win.
The team sucks, but I just think it's so early to worry about that stuff. Because I really think that the it is top three protected. I try to stress that to my friends that constantly yell at me about how bad the Wolves are. Like, I don't get it. So they're not going to be giving up the first overall pick. The worst case scenario is the fourth. It's but there's just so many. I mean, they're 3-9, right? That's 12, according to my NBA. So that means we got 60 games left.
Yeah,
there's so much to figure out. I don't think they're going to go 40-20, but I'm not worried about that right now, because I think once Carl comes back, that team starts to win at a 40% clip, 50% clip. Yeah. 40% clip, okay, let's be honest. And that's enough wins to make this all not work.
Yeah.
But I want
to... In my mind, I've always thought that, like, the Warriors will get, like, the 9th or 10th pick from us. Like, that was the pick that I thought they would end up getting from us. It was, like, 9 or 10, maybe 7 or 8 if things went really bad with injuries and stuff. So that's maybe what we're looking like more now. But, like, and we've talked about this before, like, I'm still paying that price.
And I've said, and I think I can dig up the receipts, the Wolves were never going to win the trade. And I don't think that's what people don't understand about maybe an optimist like me. When that trade was made, the Wolves never had a chance to win it. Unless Wiggins, like, somehow retired, but his salary still stayed on the books. Like, you can't win that trade because you're the one giving up a pick. But the hope is, and again, we're almost a year into this experiment, and this sucks, but we've only got five games of the D'Lo Towns thing. And Dane's broke this down beautifully, but, like, when those two do get to run high pick and roll, I mean, watch what... Russell's resurgence, right? Like, D'Angelo Russell has been a lot better these last couple weeks. It's because he's running a ton of high pick and roll with Ed Davis.
And
Jared Vanderbilt. But that's going to be Towns. And when it's Towns in him, that's why you pay the tax of that first overall or that first round pick, is because you think that's going to lift you above whatever. And I'm throwing this right up to you. Like, just I'm making this softball motion to Brandon on Zoom here, whatever. That's why you pay that price, because you don't think Andrew Wiggins is going to get better, even though, as you, I think you posted a YouTube video today, the consensus is that Andrew Wiggins has gotten a lot better. And I'd like to know what was your executive summary on Andrew Wiggins getting better now that he has a new area code and wears a different color blue.
So, to put it just short and sweet, like, it's just such bullshit that narrative is being pushed across the entire nation. My broad point was in that video on my YouTube channel was I had a quote in there. I don't remember exactly how I worded it, but the quote was the story isn't that Andrew Wiggins is playing better basketball now that he's in Golden State. The story is that Andrew Wiggins is playing the same basketball he was in Minnesota, but now he's doing it next to Steph Curry, so people are actually watching it. And I went on to say, like, Andrew Wiggins has never been a bad basketball player. He's always been an okay to good basketball player. It's just that he's been overpaid, and his role has been too big for what he should do. He was hyped up coming out of college because people hyped him up. He wasn't coming out saying, like, I'm the number one pick, like, I'm the next LeBron, I'm Maple Jordan, that was other people putting that on him. So I think Wiggins is a, you don't average 20 points per game over your career and are so bad that you're out of the league. Like, people were saying Andrew Wiggins shouldn't be in the league because he sucks. Like, Andrew Wiggins is not that bad. He's a fine NBA player. It's just, like, situation was bad. Contract was bad. But you can't put the contract on him, because who's going to turn down a max contract? I know I'm not going to turn down a huge raise if somebody comes to me, even though I know I'm only worth $13 million. I'm not going to be like, no, I'm not going to take your $27 million. You don't do that. Like, that's just not how it works. But my broader point was that Wiggins is pretty much the same player he was in Minnesota. More people are just watching him play now and realizing he wasn't as bad as their narrative was on him before he got to Golden State.
And
there's been improvements. He's looked engaged on defense.
Yep, statistically, and you are much more fluent in all sorts of stats than I am. Statistically, he's the same guy.
Worse.
Defensively, actually. He does. Yeah, worse. Okay, or worse. Let's just emphasize that. Defensively, he has looked a little more engaged.
But the one thing is, before,
if you go pull up old Wolves games, though, like, he knows how to move his feet. You know what I mean? Like, he's not a bad defender. That's the thing is, like, if you put you or I on the Timberwolves tomorrow, we would get murdered. Like, because we might be able to get a bucket or two at LA Fitness, but we're not good, right? We can't play in the NBA. Yeah. But no one will be mad at that, because the expectations aren't there. We don't have any skill. With Wiggins, the frustration has always been is that he has a lot of skill.
He should just be better than he is.
Yeah, and I mean, I know from covering the team long enough and talking to people, like, he also just doesn't really love basketball. So he still, like you said, go look at those box scores. Like, last night, they were playing the Lakers. They pull out a win. He had some good defense on LeBron in the fourth. I'm the first one to be like, dude, that defense was awesome. He was moving his feet. He's super lengthy. But I think, like, with 2 minutes left in the third quarter, he had, like, an inefficient 16 points, 0 rebounds, and 0 assists. And again, it works for them because Draymond is going to do everything else. Steph's going to give you 35. And if Wiggs can hit corner threes and then be that lengthy guy, like, it works for them. The whole point of this whole thing, rightfully or wrongfully, it wasn't Gerson Rosas that signed him to that max deal. It wasn't going to work in Minnesota. And that's why you pay the price. And that's why, again, he's not better than he was. He does look more engaged. I am happy for him, because even though I hate that he has so much skill but doesn't love basketball, and that's a fact. Like, that's not reporting. That's talk to people who work in that organization. He didn't love basketball. Yeah. And you can't teach that. So for Warriors fans to think he's going to blossom, you can't teach that. He might be a little more excited to play next to Steph, but he's never going to care that much. He's going to go home. It's a job for him. Yeah. That's what he does. But it wasn't going to work here. So it is what it is. I wish him the best. It's going to be fun. I'm sure he's going to be, you know him, like, he's going to be motivated to play the Wolves next week twice.
Yeah. We're going to be his new Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
So.
We're the new Thunder for him. But, but I will say too, those YouTube videos you put out, like, I can't wait to check this one out. It just came out before we recorded, but I'm excited because that was the narrative now this last week, is that Wiggins is better. And it just, and again, too, Jace Frederick mentioned this on Twitter today. Like, that's what happens when you win. You know what I mean? Like, when Wiggins had some defenders in terms of, like, supporters, when that one season when they won with Jimmy Butler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh, Wiggs looks good. So that's the thing, too, for the Timberwolves, is, like, some people want to say, I don't think they have 4 NBA players on their roster. Well, that's what you say when you lose a bunch of games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if this team goes out and strings together 5 wins in 8 games, like, I'm optimistic, but... But yeah, no, I thought you put it perfectly the way you said it. Like, he is what he is, and this is it, it's always been about the contract.
And to my point about, like, we've seen him play good defense on Kawhi there a little bit. We've seen him play good defense on LeBron at the end. Like, he's had stretches of doing that before. Like, literally go to YouTube and just type in Andrew Wiggins defense versus Kawhi Leonard. There'll be a video from 2017, and it'll be Andrew Wiggins playing against the Spurs and Kawhi and making some really nice stops. Look up. This is my favorite one. Andrew Wiggins versus Kevin Durant, defensive duel. Like, that's another video of him locking up KD and KD locking up him. Like, he's had these stretches. But then he also gets burned by Kyle Anderson or Dylan Brooks or whoever. Like, it's just so up and down with him, effort wise, but it's consistent in that way, which doesn't make any sense. But if you're a Timberwolves fan, you understand it. But like, yeah, like I was a big Wiggins supporter. I wrote my first ever Timberwolves article. The one of the last lines basically said, like, maybe it was even the last line, like, I'm confident this is the year Andrew Wiggins puts it together. And it's just like, and that was before last year, and he looked good. It was like after, because last year he had like that clutch performance, like in one of the first couple games where he just like hit a bunch of threes. The first game against the Nets, he like got to the lane like four or five times and just found easy buckets down the stretch and in overtime. Like, he's had those moments, but like, it's a roller coaster ride, and eventually you're gonna come back down, and it's Warriors fans, it's not gonna be pretty. We saw at the beginning of the year in preseason, they hated him. He didn't look good at all. Like, it's already started, but
and look at his, just like his ability to score. Like, go look at like X amount of points through, you know, their first 6 years. Like, he's at the top of these lists with guys like Carmelo and LeBron and all these guys.
Yeah,
he's clearly not bad. Like, he can score. That's never been the thing. It's just, it wasn't going to work here. You can argue all different ways about how they should have handled it, how they should have gotten rid of him, how they could have maximized him. But at some point, too, this is like the Steph Curry thing all over again. At some point, you just kind of got to move on. I think that's maybe the hardest thing Timberwolves fans struggle with, because it's hard to move on when you just keep losing. But it's done, man. Like, like we said, they're not going to give up a top three pick because it is protected. If it's 4 through 7, I don't know, man. Cool. Like, I know this draft coming up is really good, but I also know this draft that was, and I want to kind of pivot for this for you. This last draft, everyone hated, and I've kind of liked. Dane did a really good pod with Will DeBerg about the kind of the big three. I've liked what I've seen from some of these guys. James Wiseman has looked, to me, the least polished, but that makes sense. But he's also one of the, he's like one of the biggest human beings on earth. But going from Wiggins, I did want to, because I have to know this from you, like, going from Wiggins, former number one pick, overall pick, to our now number one overall pick, Anthony Edwards, 12 games in, I really want to know where you're at with him, because I do have some thoughts.
Yeah. So if we're going to compare, I'm not the person to talk to probably comparing, like, his start to his career to, like, Andrew. So I'm not going to get into, like, that side of it, because when Andrew was a rookie, I was, like, 15 or 16. 15 years old. So, but to talk about Ant, like, I have liked a lot of things I saw from Ant. His passing has been something that jumped out to me, and the assist numbers aren't going to show it, but he's made some passes that I didn't foresee him making as a rookie, so that's good. He still is working on his shot selection, when to drive, when to shoot the three. But I've been overall pretty happy. And even during the slump, I think it's less on him and it's more on just coaching and scheming in general, because there hasn't been a lot run for Ant. There hasn't been a lot of sets run for him. They don't get him going downhill to the rim. And he's not getting any calls at the rim. He shot like 20 free throws or something this year.
He has 21 free throws this year
in 12 games.
Yes,
that's ridiculous. And
he's playing a lot of minutes. That's the one thing. And Dane's been hammering this home on his pod, which has been beautiful. But like, this whole notion, you start to tell on yourself when you start to say certain things, when you start to tweet things like, Anthony Edwards needs to play. Like, you know, why is Anthony Edwards not starting? It's like, dude, he played 31 minutes against the Hawks in a game that was competitive throughout. So, like, he's playing a lot, but that supports our notion that he's playing a healthy amount of minutes, 12 games in, and he's averaging less than 2 free throws a game. That's a huge red flag if you just read box scores. But there was, and I know you saw this, and Jack Borman retweeted.
I was just going to find it.
I can't remember I believe it was the account is like at not Huberto on Twitter, but he put together this amazing thread of Anthony Edwards drives that he doesn't get a foul call, And it's a pretty eye-opening experience because there was a drive against the Hawks. I was just watching it on my TV. And I was literally stunned that he didn't get the foul call. Yeah. It's probably the worst play in the thread. But the dude got hammered. And I get it. He's a rookie. Like, I get some of this. But if you're a 19-year-old rookie, and I don't mean to, like, completely go textbook school here. Maybe you'll appreciate this. But, like, I remember learning about classical conditioning and psychology. And, like, that dude is so wet behind the ears that he is, like, a big, big person in my eyes of, like, you need to train him, right? Like, that's what coaching is. It's training. So if you want Ant to drive to the basket because, Ant, you're going to get foul calls. You know, you're a tough dude. I mean, that dude is so big. He's a linebacker. But he doesn't get calls. It's hard to yell at him when he starts settling for jump shots because he's, like, probably saying in practice, well, shit, coach, I go to the rim and they don't give me the whistle. So I'm just going to shoot the ball. And that's where you have to coach them. But it's like there is some explanation and some meat behind some of this stuff. It's like, watch that thread, man. He doesn't get calls. It's embarrassing.
And I tweeted that during the game yesterday. I said, Anthony Edwards gets zero calls at the rim. And I said, no wonder he settles for these jumpers. Because, okay, think about this. If every time he goes to the rim, if 4 out of 6 times, 2/3 of the time he goes to the rim, he's just getting hacked. Why not just shoot a three? Because you have a better chance of getting some points. Because you're not going to the free throw line, so you might as well get some points.
Also, too, and I know you have too. This is such a weird analogy. Have you ever played basketball? Like just in general, like you just go play pickup basketball. I used to play a lot, you know, pre-pandemic, like noon ball, right, against older dudes, older guys in their 40s and 50s that just kind of go free throw line to free throw line. But younger guy like you and I, they would just, for better or worse, hack the shit out of you. Like, if you got in the lane, they'll just hack you and make you check it up top. We're not shooting free throws in this type of basketball situation. So if I got into the paint a couple times and I just got pummeled, you know what I felt like doing? Not going to the paint anymore. Because what was worth it? I didn't, again, this is noon ball, so this is a terrible analogy, but I wasn't getting free throws. So I was like, well, what's the point of this? I'm just going to shoot threes. And I think that's where Ant is now. He's like, coach, why do I go to the basket if they're not going to give me free throws? Which is a quick pivot into, I tweeted this out once, but like I would love for Ryan to get tossed in a game just to show some firepower. Like when he got the one that you're talking about, you tweeted it after the exact same play where yesterday against the Hawks, Ryan should have got tossed for that. Just like stand up and make a point. You know what I mean? Because I also don't know too, Ryan being a young coach, I don't know how much respect, I don't want to pivot to Ryan, but how much respect Ryan gets. Cause you watched that whole game with me yesterday. Clint Capella used all of his new contract money to build a brand new residence in the paint. They never called 3 seconds on Clint Capella.
And then Saunders bitches about it, and all of a sudden Nas gets called for defensive 3 seconds.
Yes. So he was in the paint for 12 seconds, literally building a new part of his new house. And they were the whole bench. You can see it. Go watch the play. The bench is yelling. Clint Capella scores with a layup, right? I think Ryan calls a timeout. Out of the timeout, they called Naz Reid for defensive 3 seconds. It was totally a troll job by the officiating. But that type of stuff is like you need to – I watched Taylor Jenkins for the Grizzlies. I don't think Taylor – if Ja Morant would ever went to the rim, Ja's in a completely different hemisphere than Ant. But if Ja were to get fouled multiple times, I think Taylor Jenkins would say, you know what, screw this. I'm taking my mask down. I'm getting tossed. Like I have to defend my guy. So that's like something I would like to see from Ryan is because – to the point of this is I don't think Ant's as bad as the analytics say. I know there's some various tweets going on about like his how he stacks up against rookies right now. I know LaMelo Ball has looked better than he has, but I would say this if I was a non-NBA fan. I think Ant still has the highest ceiling of those two guys. Yeah. It was never going to be Wiseman. LaMelo Ball makes you win basketball games right now. Like LaMelo with this Timberwolves second unit would make them not 3-9. But that's not the point of this, is that I think Ant has the higher ceiling, that's the type of wing. When you see him drive in and connect with Enes Kanter in midair, it was like watching two just Godzillas just crash. Like, if he can start to get a couple of those foul calls, get 4 free throws a game, he has to make them, obviously. But if he can get that, I think it'll boost his confidence more because I think he has one of the quickest first steps in the league.
Yeah, and the thing I hate the idea of like you have to earn that call or superstar calls or whatever. That, to me, I hate that. Like, that is the worst thing in basketball is like, oh, LeBron will get that call, but Anthony Edwards won't get that call. That just doesn't make any sense to me. I do not like that aspect, but that's never going to change. It's whatever. The thing I wanted to say is if Trae Young is getting that stupid foul call, here's my thing with foul. The NBA is so weird with their fouls. Trae Young's foul like that, if he stops to shoot and just shoots his normal motion, I'm okay with it. But when he backs up into the person behind him and kind of draws that contact with his back and his butt, that's where I don't like it. But I also don't like D'Lo's whole off the screen thing. Like, I don't think that should be a foul either. Like,
right.
There's just certain fouls that I don't. So I'm not just saying it because that happens against us and the other one happens for us. Like, I don't like either of those calls. But if those are fouls, and going to the basket's a foul. That's my broader point.
But if you try to draw a foul and you don't get it, like, everyone watching at home cringes because it automatically makes you look like a bad basketball player. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
When Russell does that weird thing with his leg and his arm, and if he doesn't and just chucks it at the backboard, if he doesn't get the call, he literally just threw the ball at the backboard, and it's a shot attempt, but it's essentially a turnover, right? So you're just groaning at home. Now, if he gets the whistle, you're like, hell yeah, three free throws. Same with Trey. But that's why I try to go back to this Ant thing, is that sometimes aesthetically it's not so fun to watch. But if you bring up that thread, you're like, okay, if those were whistles, my whole view on this dude would change. Because he would be like, okay.
Now he's aggressive going to the rim and not getting every shot blocked. This time he's...
And I think sometimes his strength as a 19-year-old, I mean, like, you watch so much basketball. LeBron, I try to watch every LeBron game. He probably gets fouled 90% of the time. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like the Shaq thing. Like, you don't know how to officiate a guy like that can take so much punishment. Uh-huh. I think you start to see a little bit of that with Ant. Like, he's driven to the rim a couple times, and he's had to double, triple clutch and absorb contact, and he still finishes, and it's impressive. Yeah. But somebody said
something about him. You know, if he double clutches, like, they're not going to call it. And my pushback is he's double clutching because that's the only way he can hope to get a shot off,
right?
And maybe score some points, because he's not getting the call. He's got to try and get the ball in the hoop somehow.
And you know, that's a microcosm. Like, that's like my biggest focus with him, is I think he's getting kind of hosed on calls. I would like to see him rebound a little more. I think he's too athletic. I think rebounding is a sign. That's why I like watching LaMelo Ball play right now. I think rebounding is a sign of basketball IQ and just like common, you know what I mean? Like, the ball goes up, I want to go get the ball. And if I go get the ball, I can bring it up. And maybe it's that simple, again, classically conditioning, just being like, hey, and if you go get the ball, this rebound, you can come down and run a high pick and roll. Because I think, again, too, I think his passing, I only knew Anthony Edwards through the prism of all you young guys that did pre-draft stuff. But I never saw the passing aspect. It was all about, you know, him being not a gunner, but an offensive, you know, really good scorer. I think his passing has been the biggest surprise to me. But again, like, going back to Ryan and other stuff, like, he needs to have the ball in his hands more to make more plays, because I think he's so passive right now because he said the right things. You know this. You've listened to this. He says, this is Carl's team. This is D'Lo's team. This is Malik's team. Like, I just got to fit in. But sometimes by fitting in, he just kind of stands around, and that's not helping his development.
Yeah.
So he needs to be able to run more pick and rolls and do more sets, because I think he's a good passer.
I agree. All right, let's get into some of these takes that people left for us, because I know you got to go here pretty quick, but
oh yeah, that's right. So this is the point of this.
The one, there's not a ton, and some of them aren't that hot, so I don't think we got to talk about them too much. The one comes from Bradley Phil Smith. He said Wolves are going to make the playoffs, not just the play-in, the actual playoffs. I think that's pretty hot, just because they're going to be so far out of it by the time Cat comes back.
They're 3-9.
It would take a lot to
get
to the eighth seed. It would take a lot to get there.
They're 3-9 in a 72 game season. There are 60 games left. If they went 30-30, which I imagine every Wolves fan would sign up for right now, that'd make them 33-39, and that's not going to get them in the playoffs. So
right, it would have to be really good.
Yeah. I would more shoot for, like, let's try, and this sucks, but let's try to win 25 games, because I think 25 games will still put them in the 7th, 8th worst record, which will push off how high that pick is to the Warriors.
Yeah. So that one's pretty hot, I would say. Another person says, Abshir said, it's more of a question, but I kind of a hot take. Are the Wolves front office quietly tanking for not signing a power forward and trying to keep Towns out for extended period of time? This doesn't make any sense to me. Cat rushed back. They wouldn't have let him rush back if they wanted to tank like that. And they're not just like making up that he has COVID or anything. So there's not a lot to say about this, but the Wolves definitely are not trying to tank by keeping Cat out of the lineup.
And to that other point, I know we're the Timberwolves. I know we're bad. We've always been bad. But they didn't not try to sign a power forward. Like, there are facts. Again, I know the internet has been in a different spot right now with facts.
Derrick Jones Jr.
They tried for Derrick Jones Jr. Right. They tried for Jermichael Green. Paul Millsap, you know what I mean? Like, there was a domino effect that came through. I talked about this with Jake and Jack.
Even, like, Larry Nance and... there's someone else, but it's out there. There is sourced information that they tried hard,
and not just
for one guy, for multiple people.
And to the Rondae Hollis Jefferson thing, because that obviously caused a stir, which is fair. But I will say too that, like, I'm kind of more amped to watch Jared Vanderbilt get that power forward minutes than I was Rondae Hollis Jefferson, because I think one of those guys has a long term future and one of them doesn't. And the one that does is the guy that's on the roster. So.
Yeah,
they're not tanking.
Yep. Another one from upset Timberwolves fan. He said, Rosas is using Saunders as a sacrificial lamb, so to speak. He's teaching the young core a lesson in humility by saying, quote, you think you can do this on your own, good luck, quote. After this season a few moves, we can expect to see more structure. I don't think that's the case. I think it's more of Rosas wants Saunders here because, one, Saunders has a good relationship with most of the players, and two, that Saunders will do to a certain extent what Rosas asks of him, of like what type of system he wants them to run and just like all of that type of things. I don't think that Rosas is purposefully setting Saunders up for success or for failure so that they can be like, okay, now we need a real coach in here and like these guys know how to lose.
And sometimes the world isn't the big conspiracy theory that you think it is. Like, I think...
So you're telling me I'm not the only real person and everybody else is robots? Is that what you're trying to tell
me? Right, exactly. Like, I don't think Gerst... This is some of the stuff, too, that, like, I just try to, like... I don't think everything he's done is great, and I would definitely call him out on a couple moves. I don't think it was the strongest free agent offseason, but also there wasn't a lot... Like, again, how do you defend a guy that's, like, you just said... tried for Jermichael Green, Paul Millsap, Larry Nance Jr., Derrick Jones Jr. You know what I mean? Like, trying doesn't mean shit if you ended up with Juancho Hernan Gomez. Yeah. But if you're him, do you want him to, like, you know, like if you put Gerst in this Zoom with us and he said, well, what did you want me to do? Trade Jarrett Culver to get Larry Nance? Like, I don't know. Like, there was a lot of pushback when everyone was talking about Jarrett Culver for Aaron Gordon this summer. Now, I think I'd want that really bad, but there was a lot of people that didn't want to do that. So I just, you know, he's not going to do the Tom Thibodeau burn everything down for wins, which again, Tibbs is the most successful coach and GM we've had in a while, but he also burned the building to the ground, and that's why we're still picking up after it. So I don't think it's that. But I also think too that this isn't just Ryan and Gerst. Like, come on, you follow football and basketball and baseball. Like, coaches become the sacrificial lamb at some point.
They're always
the first one.
They're always like, the first one out.
Like, Gerst is the president of this team, and he has Glenn's ear, for better or worse. At some point, I just think this is a real thing. I don't think this is a hot take. Like, yeah, I do think sometime Ryan gets fired. That's just what I think. I just think at some point, unless they can go 25 and 35 these last 60 games and show gradual improvement and sell it to Glenn and sell it to Gerst, that next year, which has, regardless of what you think, has always been the plan.
This has never been the year. That the only reason this is the year is because of the draft pick. That's the only reason anybody has ever thought this was the year.
And I'm not trying to punt on expectations or make excuses, because if they don't show significant improvement next year, Dane Moore has been talking about this since 2019. It's always been about the summer of 2021. If they don't make a stride next year, then you'll be right to be mad, because everyone's getting fired. Okay, and the team might move to Seattle. So it's not like they have no repercussions or no one's holding them in line. I just don't think that expectations need to be that high right now, because before Carl got COVID, it wasn't that high. So I think Ryan will be a sacrificial lamb at some point. That's my take. I just think.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I don't think he's set up to be
right now.
Like, they're going to fire him after this year because we don't make the playoffs. Like, that's kind of the point there. But yeah, it's interesting with this whole situation.
Do you have any takes? I want to see you just spit one out. Like, do you have one you've been working on?
Okay, off the top of my head, this is one that
I just put you on the spot.
This is one that we're never going to be able to find out, because you can't go back. I think if Cal was healthy, this team would be about 500. Like, I think they would be.
Oh. Not like even
six
yeah.
and six or seven. I think they're legitimately better than a lot of teams in the Western Conference, and I thought that before the year, but now, you know, I don't think they're gonna make the playoffs because of that or whatever. And I did have another hot take, but now I can't remember.
I think you're so right on that. Like, they're 3-9, but you could tell many fans that they're 3-39, and they'd be like, yeah, that makes sense, because these first 3 weeks have felt like 3 months. But go back and look at just their individual games. Like, yeah, they probably were going to lose to the Lakers and Clippers if they had three Karl Anthony Towns, but I think you're spot on. Like, they were going to probably maybe sweep that Spurs series. They easily, you know,
well,
probably
they lost
get that one.
The Spurs, they lost the Spurs game with Kat, so that part.
That's true, but I'm just saying, like, if he wasn't also coming in with one arm, you know what I mean?
Oh, right.
If they would have had him normal.
That's fair.
They'd
have more of a sense of who they were, so, like, they could just be getting better as every game goes on. It's like, and, like, maybe things change in, like, the Blazers game, because you actually have a big guy that can, like, play some defense on Nurkic.
Yep.
You know, like, things could, you can't understate. Because even if he doesn't score the 30 points that you lost by, he still sets up so much other stuff and saves some points. And yeah, do you have any?
I think I'll give you two. And they're please delete this podcast if it doesn't get close to this. But so they are 3.5 games out of the 8 spot right now. The Timberwolves are. The Grizzlies are 7-6. But again, it feels like they're 35 games back. I think. And this isn't optimism, this is just a thought. I think they will get hot while other teams kind of shut it down. Because, again, when March Madness starts to kick around and we start to see all these guys on, like, primetime, Cade Cunningham and all these guys, teams will just shut it down, right? So, like, the Orlando Magic are already broken, like, in terms of injuries and faults and stuff. You could see them either ship Aaron Gordon out and tank, or just shut him down and tank. I think the Wolves will finish. I think we'll have at least 1 week of a conversation about those play-in games. I think we have, like, a week where, like, hey, if they go 2-1 this week, they could be in the 10 seed for the play-in game. So I still think that's an optimistic thing. I also think another one, I think Rubio doesn't last. I'm born on October 7th. I don't think Rubio is here on October 7th, 2021. I just don't think it's worked. I think he's a contract. I think it was a great story to bring him back. It sucks that there's been no fans. It'll be ironic to trade him before you can have fans in the building. But I think Gerse is itching to make a move. And that's the contract to do it with.
So with him, do you think it was like, I can't make the move with James Johnson this year, so I need to get another deal that's going to expire next year so I can make the deal next year and find the perfect player to make with that $17 million? Because I wonder if that's not part of it.
I do. Like, I know that people say that, you know, flipping James Johnson essentially for Rubio just added another year on the books. But the problem if James Johnson was on this team, although he would be beneficial because his team does lack toughness, if the team was going through the exact same shit that they're going through now, 3-9, all we'd be talking about right now is how are we going to dump James Johnson because he's an expiring contract. Yeah. So there wouldn't be a lot to do with him right now because the team sucks. So at least with Rubio, because again, like the benefit of an expiring contract is that teams can use it to then clear book, like cap space. The Wolves wouldn't have James Johnson's rights in 3 months. So I'm with you. I do think that's the case. And I think, again, if you think if you like him or love him or hate him, if you don't think Gerson Rosas and Sachin Gupta and all those guys are literally have a timer in the front office on when every single guy can be traded, I think you're mistaken, because I think they want to make another splash move, and I think they want to bring in another forward. Like, I think they too hate watching Wancho play basketball. So even though they signed him, they kind of had to, because it's like you said, he can still play. And at $7 million for a couple of years, right? Because I think it's just 2 years and then a player option.
And it's not even $7 million. You know, it's like...
Or team option, I should say. Little, team option.
This year's a little bit under, and then the third year's a little bit more, when that's the team option. So, yeah.
So then you're looking at what? Rubio and Wancho combined for, like, what, $24 million for the next season? Yeah. And then the following year for Wancho, the team option. So you're looking at possibly $24 million of an expiring deal for the – and again, I know it, they're bad, but for the summer that Dane's been talking about for years, like, it's this summer, man. Like, I know they don't have a pick, or they might have a pick, but it's this summer that they make that next move. Because we don't have time to get into this, and we should talk about it next time, but, like, I've liked so much what I've seen from Malik Beasley that I think – any hot take that involves him being sent out is wrong, because I think that dude is a cornerstone for what they're trying to do. So it'll be interesting. But yeah, I think your takes are pretty spot on. I think that's a good.
I have one more. So the Wolves are obviously like six games under 500, right?
Yep.
I think at some point this year they will be within a few games, like two, three games of being 500. Like, I think they'll get there. And it'll probably happen, it'd have to happen probably relatively sooner rather than later, because the further they get away from it, it'll be tough. But I think there's a chance to get close to 500 again.
I don't think it's going to sustain
all season, but, like, if Cat does come back, even after the Warriors games, like, there's some winnable games that come up right after that. Then they play the Sixers, who are good. Then it's Cavs, Spurs, Thunder. And then you got Mavericks and Clippers, and you got the Hornets and the Raptors, who have looked bad.
Right, but the Mavericks have looked bad. You know what I mean? Like, they're I think, under 500. They're, like, 10th in the West. The Clippers, if you catch them at home, you never know. The Hornets, you know what I mean? Like, again, you and I are being optimists again, but
yeah,
I think that's a good take, too. Yeah, if they come out tomorrow and beat the Magic, if they could beat the Magic and go to 4-9, and then you sniff the Hawks game and you're 5-9, everything looks a lot different. But I'm with you, man. Like, it. If you're listening to this, first of all, thank you. But if you're listening to this, it's not fun to lose. I get it. And it's tough to keep making excuses for this team. But the thing that I keep coming back to, and I've told you this before, is, like, if you why do you watch the team then? You know what I mean? Like, they've given you no reason to be a fan. They've never had enough success. Like, go cheer for someone else. But if I'm going to watch this, it's not going to be doom and gloom. Because I do think... And I want to say, I'll wrap my point up with this, and I do want, like, just maybe a yes or no or a little background. I think this is one of the more talented teams I've watched in 10 years. Not even covering, again, you were a baby 10 years ago. But I think just talent-wise, this is one of the better rosters in 10 years. They've just had four games of their best player. And I think that is skewing everyone's thoughts.
Yeah, even, like, top to bottom, it could rival, like, the year they made the playoffs, just, like, talent-wise. Like, this roster is... It's not as talented, I don't think. But, like, when you think top to bottom and, like, intriguing pieces you have for the future, it trumps that. It trumps that year. So, but yeah, I know you do have to get out, and that's pretty much all I wanted to talk about. So, thanks again, Kyle, for coming on. I do appreciate it. Any last words for people that are feeling down?
No, I would just, again, it's tough.
Good.
I would say if you're not having fun right now watching them. I know we're talking about Jaden McDaniels. By the way, I'm excited to read that. So make sure you promote that when it comes out. But
I will.
I don't think you and I thought we'd be talking about Jaden McDaniels 12 games in. But I just think that sometimes Do you remember, this will be my closing thing, do you remember remember life last April, May, June, and July? Like when we didn't have basketball? Britt Robson said this the other day on Twitter, but bad NBA basketball is still better than no NBA basketball.
No basketball, yeah.
And with all the rumors sometimes about the Wolves moving and stuff, like, I love that franchise, even though they deserve none of my love, none of my attention. I love them. So I'm going to keep coming back. I think this is, like, the darkest moment. This weekend could be good. They could win a game or two. But I think when you get Carl back, it's going to start to be more fun. I think – and again, too – this,
and at least you can dissect what the team is doing because everybody's like healthy, you know, like if you lose, it's like, okay, you had everybody. Now what went wrong? What can we fix for next time? Because you don't want to completely change everything when your best player is not going to be there.
And if nothing else, this team is the worst team in the league, but I think has some of the best coverage in all of the NBA because I am plugged into other NBA circles. I talked to other site managers at SB, like, The coverage, your pod, Jake's pod, Dane's pod, all these pods and stuff, all these articles, Wolf Among Wolves, Canis, like, you can at least learn something, man. So just tune in. Try not to focus on the result for a couple more weeks. Be critical of things. Be critical of Ryan. Be critical of D'Angelo Russell. But bad basketball is better than no basketball. That's always my thing. Yeah. So that's it.
And I think we'll leave it at that. So, again, that's Kyle Tighe. Thanks for coming on, Kyle. And I'm Brendan, and I will be back soon, so make sure you tune in. But thanks for listening. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.